Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 31. As Sergio mentioned, this would happen a couple weeks ago. We're going to have to start scrapping the bottom of the barrel for names. So we're going to go with one of our buddies this week. We're going to go with Carlo Pensoglio. So hello, Carlo Pensoglio. Because as I do this, I pull up the number history each week. And let's just say it was a bunch of third-choice goalkeepers you can't remember from 10 or so years ago. And then a bunch of youth players who you definitely don't remember from much longer than 10 or so years ago. So let me first bring in the usual trio, and I guess we could call it a quartet since I'm part of it as well, but we've got Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
How's it going, Danny?
It's going well. We've got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Hey, I just lost internet for a second, but I'm back, just like Carlo Pensoglio. Just when you think he's gone, he's always there.
And last but not least, Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Happy to be here, as always. I do think that Carlo Pensoglio has, like, one of the better gigs around.
Yes.
I think being the third keeper at, like, a world-class level team, like, probably one of the better gigs around overall.
Absolutely. And knowing that he gets to hang out with Gigi Buffon on the bench pretty much, what, 75% of the time these days is not a bad gig. And be paid to do it is not a bad gig. So since this is our final episode of 2020, and may ye be gone 2020, we're going to spend the first part of the episode kind of looking back on a few things that happened, even though it was obviously a very wild year, and that Juventus's holiday break, because of said wild year and the ongoing pandemic, lasted all of about a week. I think they had about 6 days of rest before they were training again to on Monday. So let me just go around the horn and throw out a very easy question, starting with Sam Lopresti. 2020, your thoughts?
No, but in reality, this was about as crazy a year as you could possibly imagine. I mean, it's seen such a turnover in the club in terms of just it's a year that has seen Juventus back up to the pack a little bit in Italy and see a lot of the rest of Italy get closer. It's, you know, you knew it was going to happen at some point. And, you know, it's a fair question to ask whether the Scudetto last season would have been Juve's if the lockdown hadn't happened. But looking back, I think it's a year that has showed us how resolute the human spirit can be, both overall watching, you know, the absolute horrors of the early parts of the pandemic, and make no mistake about it, those horrors are still happening. We're just a little more inured to them now. And also when it comes to sport, you know, seeing leagues, both soccer and everywhere else, baseball, basketball, the NFL here in the US, finding a way. And I'm not going to try and be prosaic and say finding a way so that people can have, you know, their sports and their, you know, distraction in such a terrible time. We all know that they found a way because they wanted to make the money, as much of the money that they lost back as they could. I get that. I'm not that naive. I don't think anyone on this panel is. But the fact that it was done gave a lot of people a little bit more mental peace than they might otherwise have had as we've gone through this horrendous ordeal as a world. So that's what this says to me, beyond Juventus, beyond anything else. I'm getting very philosophical here. I'm sorry, but yeah, that's what that really says to me.
What about you, Chucks?
Yeah, I mean, there's as Sam alluded to, there's definitely the societal side of just kind of, you know, what 2020 was about. But then obviously there's also the footballing side. I guess I'll start with kind of a mixture of the two, which is that for me, I think the biggest lesson just this year has been sport, the role of sport, or specifically the role of football in society and just in kind of the bigger picture. Like, what is A, the importance, and B, kind of the role, I guess, of football, again, keeping it just to football, but obviously this applies to other sports as well. But what is the role of football in society? And yeah, what is its importance? We saw this, you know, just in the beginning, kind of in the March period, before all the lockdowns, before basically all of global football shut down, we saw that, especially in the Premier League. I remember specifically in the Premier League, they were basically like, oh, we'll just keep playing. And then I think what was the breaking point was when Mikel Arteta tested positive. I think he did. Yeah, I think he did test positive then. And then people were like, oh, wow, okay. Or if Mikel Arteta can get it, if like an Arsenal manager, if someone that, you know, in such a big position can get it, oh, okay, maybe we should then like stop it, you know. And it was really kind of a reckoning and kind of a humbling moment, I guess, for football, just to see like, okay, maybe, you know, we should get off our perch and get off our, slightly inflated image that the footballing world has of itself. But that said, you know, as the pandemic went on, then we started to realize like, oh, okay, there are obviously people like, you know, like janitors and like grounds keepers and ground staff and like just all those kind of, you know, behind the scenes people that are also affected. It's not just, you know, yeah, I mean, Messi and Ibrahimovic and Ronaldo and stuff, like, oh man, we don't get to play for a while. But it's those, you know, everyday people that, yeah, that lose their livelihoods and, you know, arguably, or sometimes, unfortunately, their lives. So, you know, there's kind of that bigger picture. But then just within football specifically, or Juventus specifically, I think this year was really one for, to me anyway, it just showed that the real uncertainty I have about just the future and just the general management of the club. I mean, just the entire ordeal with Sarri, and I mean, obviously getting rid of Allegri and then getting Sarri, and then he didn't have like a squad that was for him. And he still won the Scudetto, but then poor performances in the Champions League, and then now he's gone, but then we're still paying his salary, if I'm not mistaken. So then there's that.
You are correct.
Yeah, and that is, well, not good, Bob. We're not great, Bob. So, there's that. And then obviously just a huge leap into the unknown of getting Andrea Pirlo as manager. And just that being indicative of, once again, for me, just the general just lack of, I think, future direction and just lack of planning at the club. Again, just in my eyes anyway, just me starting to question do we really know what we're doing? In terms of upper management, what's going on? I never really felt that during the Allegri years, but now I've just, since just the old Sarri to Pirlo ordeal, felt that a little bit more. But then again, just the replenishing of the squad. You have these youngsters coming in now, Chiesa, Kulusevski, while Morata is not, I think he's 27, so he's not super young, but he's not old. He's technically peak years. 27, I think that's, a peak year.
He's your age, so you just want him to be young still.
He is. I'm younger than a skippity hop and a fish and whatever that saying is. I'm fresh, man. I'm fresh. Especially when I cut off my facial hair. But nobody can see that because this is a podcast. So, youngsters, and De Ligt, obviously, he came in last season. But just the rejuvenation of the squad, I think that's also a big story just of this year, really kind of starting last year, but anyway, continuing into this year. So there's, on one hand, just that uncertainty and that just kind of lack of direction, but then that look at the future, look at the squad, look at just the spine of the squad and that future. And that's that's really good. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. All things considered, I have no idea. I have no idea. Let's see what the hell happens in next year.
Yeah, I guess like a lot of you guys said, just overall as a whole, obviously it was a pretty weird year, I think, in all aspects, sports being one of the least important ones. But considering this is ostensibly a sports podcast, we're going to try to focus on that here. But yeah, it's weird because I was, the other day I fell down a Juventus YouTube page rabbit hole, which, I poke fun here and there at the social media team in Juventus because sometimes they're really corny and kind of suck, but sometimes they're really good. And they, their YouTube page is actually really good. They have a bunch of great stuff there. It's very easy for you to get lost in a bunch of highlights and stuff like that. So I was watching highlights and I saw one of the videos for the last Inter match, which I believe was either one of the last ones to still have people on it. And
it didn't have any. It was closed doors.
No. The one in Milan, not the one.
Oh,
in,
the Inter, the.
Yeah, the first one, I mean, yeah.
Okay, so that was in October.
Yeah, so definitely there were more, but I don't know why I seem to recall it was the last one. So it was definitely wasn't one of the last ones. I apologize for that. But it did, just watching that and the atmosphere and the people, and you could tell it was a big game because it was at that point. And just made me miss it so freaking much because when we started with this whole no people in the stadium thing, I just remember thinking, man, this is weird. I'm just not going to get used to this. This feels really weird. And the sad part is that I'm kind of used to it now. I just don't even pay attention to the fact that, it's empty and there are no people there. And they just pipe in noise to the TV, broadcast. And it really is, it's kind of like a microcosm as of how, everything changed so rapidly, and football and sports, as everything in the world, just had to adapt. And it really is kind of a bummer that I'm just, getting used to that, getting used to just enjoying the game, enjoying the football without people, without fans, without what makes it really, really worth it. Really, really what makes people so passionate is that there are fans there and that people care and the atmosphere of a big game. You can't really replicate that. So, Just one of the many things that we have just had to deal with as everything else. Just deal with it and move on and try to make it happen and try to make it work. And And yeah, just overall, just a very, very weird year for a sports watching person, for a sports watching fan. I truly hope that, you know, we are at the end of the tunnel, but as you all know, as most people know, we're still kind of have some ways to go. But yeah, 2020, not a year that I'm gonna be, you know, looking back very fondly, to be honest, overall. Not in a, you know, world type of thing, and definitely not on a sports type of thing, because the team for large parts of time was not very good. So yeah. That would be my quick recap, I would say.
Yeah, and if I could just add something to what Sergio was saying, I think one of the kind of societal stories from this year / the pandemic was, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this buzz term in many articles you guys have read, but this whole K-shaped recovery thing. So, you know, where basically, you know, the rich like really benefited from the pandemic, and they, you know, had stocks and they had capital and their home prices appreciated and all that. And then, you know, poor people went, you know, down the other side and just really suffered. Well, basically the rest of the population suffered. And I think likewise, you see that in football. And specifically, I was thinking about one story that really stood out to me, but that, I mean, it did get a lot of, attention, but it started in the Premier League, which was this whole idea that was mainly driven, I think, by Manchester United and Liverpool, mainly, but I think it had support from other clubs, which was this whole European Premier League idea, which is basically just the Super League, European Super League. And the reason I bring it up is, like, I remember reading one commentary on it that said, you know, isn't it just, like, so cynical that in the midst of, like, a pandemic when clubs are, you know, almost, I mean, on the brink of financial ruin and, like, you know, obviously people losing their lives and like people getting sick, that's when they sneak in this announcement of like, hey, by the way, we got this European Premier League thing going on. You guys want to join? Yeah, no. Okay. You know, and I agree. I think that was, I mean, frankly, the height of like cynicism to do it, like of the timing of it to publish the idea just in, I think it was in October, I want to say. I don't exactly remember when it was published. It wasn't too long ago, because I remember I wrote about it in one of my monthly recaps, so it wasn't too long ago. But yeah, I mean, I think that's just one of those stories again where it's like, and again, it's showing again how sport or football just mirrors society. Like, you know, you have this same kind of issue going on in society of this like kind of peeling away of the rich from like everybody else. And obviously you've seen this in football like for many years, but now just like it was almost poetic that in the midst of the pandemic, it was like just heightened even more of this, like, okay, let's put this Super League out. Let's like really push it. And basically, you know, what that would result in. And I remember the Premier League version of it as well. They, you know, you had the European Premier League, and then you had the idea, I think just within the Premier League, that they would break away from, I think, the championship, and then they're basically going to pay, which is, I mean, almost like ingenious, really, where the big clubs would just basically pay the rest of the other tiers of English football, just say like, hey, here's this big lump of money now, like basically piss off, like, and just like, you know, go have your own league, go play your own stuff. And then, you know, we have our own like club. And yeah, I mean, I think that just epitomizes really just the societal, what's going on in society. So yeah, I mean, I think that was a big story for me in 2020. And it is very pertinent to Juventus, obviously, because, you know, I mean, we would likely be one of the clubs that would be in, you know, in this Super League, which obviously has been talked about since as long as I can remember. So yeah, I just wanted to, you know, highlight that story. And who knows? I mean, is it going to come back up in 2021? I don't know. I mean, let's see.
It's bound to, right? I mean, it almost...
Yeah,
it's in some ways, it almost seems inevitable with just how much of a, I mean, obviously the pandemic has drastically changed the financial aspect of everybody, but for the, you know, the biggest clubs there are, it just kind of seems like it's inevitable, because you just see how much revenue, even without fans in the stands, that the Champions League is able to produce, or how much money, I should say, not revenue, but how much money just it's costing just in TV and everything, and sponsorships and all that. So yeah, I mean, Super League, it kind of, you get the feeling a lot of the time that it's just kind of, you're just waiting for that last shoe to drop and for it to become a real thing, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to keep my eyes very, you know, fixed on that. Just the conversations around that story. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
We wouldn't expect anything other than from
the Chucks. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I have, I wear many hats and many capes, you know, to save the
world. Dude, remember what Edna Mode said? No capes.
I mean, you know, got to feel like Batman sometimes.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, seeing as this is the Juventus podcast, and even though there was a long, very drawn out lockdown because of the shutdown in Italy as a result of the pandemic, figured we'd have a little bit of fun, even though 2020 has not been all that much fun. So we'll start with Sergio, your best moment of the past 12 months.
Here, just number one, there were not that many, really. It was I think everyone in our recap pieces of last season, Sarri's last season, one and only season, we all kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, despite everything, they did win the league, as Chuck said, but you know, the Champions League exit was kind of, you know, embarrassing. And the Coppa Italia, well, you know, whatever. While the results were never on the pitch per se, it was, even if they were, it was just a drag. It was just boring football. It wasn't what we were, you know, promised in a way with the appointment of Mauricio Sarri. So there were not a lot of moments that I could point out and be like, yes, like this was really fun or this was really cool. If I had to point out, you know, I would say, and as we're talking 2020 as a calendar year, I was just really happy with the incredible form that Alvaro Morata got when he came back to the club. Like, he was just such a heartwarming moment in a season and in a year where we kind of really needed that, because he was a guy that, you know, I read in the, you know, Into the Calderon, which is the Atletico Madrid blog in the SB Nation network, you know, that when Morata was presented and he said that, you know, he should have never left, that he always loved Juventus, that he apparently does that at every club he plays for. So that was kind of funny. But you could, maybe it's just me being biased, but I do think that he actually meant it, especially because of what we know of his career, right? Like, he had his best moments as a Juve player. That's kind of the time that established him as like a top tier striker. So I'm inclined to believe him. His wife is from the area. Obviously, he really cares for the region, for the club. And to see him come back with a lot of people doubting him, with a lot of people think that, you know, he's going to be so-so. And then he just, you know, just going to scorch earth on the league, on the Champions League, on everything. It was just really, really fun and great to see. And it kind of reminded you that sometimes, you know, those type of moves where it's just like, you just need to have a guy who's happy to be there and who's going to just, you know, pour his heart out for the club. Sometimes that does make a difference. So I was really happy to see that. And, you know, I think outside of that, just Dybala had some good moments in last season. But I mean, outside of that, I can't really point to a lot of things that really I could say. This was just a really fun time to root for Juventus, which is sad, but it's also, I think, true. I don't know if you guys have any other moments that you would like to mention.
I could go with one in particular in the calendar year 2020 that spoke out to me, and it's kind of bittersweet because you know, we were, Sergio, you and I were talking for just a second about the the second Inter game, the actual one, the one in March that was pretty much the last game in Italy before everything finally shut down. I mean, as even looking at it in hindsight and knowing everything that followed, there was something about that game that really does that really showed to me just how much the guys that are actually on the field care and how much it means. Like, there were no fans in the stands. There was a calamity going on. You know, it was, you know, here in the U.S. where and North America, Central America, where we all live, it was, we were on the precipice of it. In Italy, it was pretty much there. And yet, in a game with no fans, to see how much winning that game meant to the Juventus players, like when Dybala scored that goal in the second half, which was absolutely freaking brilliant, the entire bench just emptied and mobbed him. And that to me was about as pure a soccer moment as you can get in this era of, you know, modern football and money and so much other stuff. To see the real joy on the faces of these guys as they played a game to no one, to just the television cameras, and went that, and that to me was a really nice moment to me, because it just shows you they really are just like us when you really come down to it. They're just a lot better at the game than we are.
That Inter game was going to be the one I mentioned. And as you were talking, Sam, I pulled up my post-game thread from that game. And I had the line with the Dybala goal embedded underneath it. And I said, can you imagine what it would have been like with Allianz Stadium packed and Dybala scoring that goal to basically clinch the win? I mean, it would have been just deafening noise. And I can't imagine if it was full, how many people would have their ears still ringing the next day because of how loud that reaction would have been. I know Sergio mentioned it. I've become pretty used to no fans, and I mean, there are good things. I mean, I enjoy hearing the interactions between the players and everything, and how they talk, because, you know,
love hearing Buffon.
Well, I love hearing Buffon, but just in just in general, hearing the players interact. And I mean, with so many different languages and players from different countries on this team, it's interesting to see how they all interact and communicate. And you know, in normal times we wouldn't be able to hear that. And you know, you kind of compare the men's team to the women's team, where it's all, you know, it's nine Italians and a couple of players who have been in Italy for a while. So they're all speaking Italian, but at times, you know, you can hear Spanish between, say, like Alessandro and Arthur. You can hear, or Portuguese, I should say, and then Spanish between others. And then, you know, De Ligt is obviously, Chuck's mentioned last week, he's working on his Italian, and you can hear different players working in Italian. So it's just kind of a mixing, you know, a melting pot of all these different things. So, yeah, I think that Inter game is the one game that, from the ill, you know, even though we won a trophy, the ill-fated Sarri era, that really kind of will stick with me, even though so much, I mean, it's hard to forget that there were so many games after the restart happened that, it, you know, that was the last one before the shutdown went into effect.
Also, just thinking, I think the same can be said. Imagine what the sound is going to be like the first time the Allianz gets to be full again and somebody scores a goal. Doesn't even have to be a crazy one like that, like Dybala's. The place is going to come down. Like, they always used to say that the old that Shea Stadium here in Queens, if it got really rocking, you could feel the entire building sway. I feel like that would be a possibility.
What about you, Chucks?
Yeah, yeah. Just to comment on the Inter game, I do remember Dybala's second goal. I mean, of course, I remember that. I just remember his reaction. It was just, it really was just joy. Like, it was pure joy on his face. I remember that, like, how he ran to the bench and just, like, yeah, he was just happy, you know. And that was just, especially considering how, you know, his second half of the year, how his fate has very much turned. It's just nice to remember, you know, when he just had that, you know, pure joy and that pure skill, really, on the pitch. And also the Morata shout out from Sergio. I thought, you know, it's funny because I thought of Morata when he came. I remember the podcast actually where we're talking about strikers coming in like Suarez. It at that point it seemed like, oh yeah, Suarez is coming. And it was Dzeko and then yeah, Morata. And I remember I was against the Suarez signing. And then yeah, Dzeko as well. But I remember Morata. I was like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I remember. Yeah, no, it was Sam. You had brought it up. Like, yeah, what if we get Morata? I was like, oh yeah. I mean, yeah, hell. I mean, I guess that will work. I mean, hell, you know, it'll just plug the hole. It'll fix it. Like, you know, but I remember I was like surprised. Like when you brought it, I was like, oh yeah, kind of hadn't thought about that. But you know, I saw that as kind of a pragmatic solution and just. The way I saw Morata was like he would be kind of a facilitator striker. So as in he would, okay, score a few goals here and there, but really his role would be to like make sure that Ronaldo and Dybala play like really well and like that they score, you know. That was what I had imagined it as. And then he just took off and just, you know, yeah. I mean, just banged in the goals left, right, and center and facilitated goals as well. Him and Ronaldo have been, I mean, a very good combination. Together, so that's definitely the, I would say, the surprise really of 2020. But I do have two other mentions. The first one, and sorry, Danny, you're gonna have to use the censorship button for this one. The first highlight of the year for me is Inter not winning. That absolute nothing.
Oh yeah,
absolutely nothing. Those suckers. I mean, they still thought, you know. And it's always, to me, it's always been a year of like, oh, Inter are gonna like be good this year. we cool. Now we aight.
What are they, Sergio?
Suck at them.
Frauds. They're well-known frauds. Always. What I always did enjoy is that the one trophy that they had the best chance to win was the Europa League, right? Like in the final, they could have won that. Which, in my opinion, was just perfect because it would have established them as the very best of the like second tier teams, which to me is what everything that Inter can, you know, just really, that's their best case scenario, and they couldn't even do that. So I was really like Chuck said, I think that was definitely a highlight of the year so far.
Yeah, as one of my favorite rappers would say, they're just sucker MCs, suck MCs. That's right, but the real the less poking fun at moment of 2020 for me was that Barcelona victory, the 3-0 victory, which obviously was very recent. That, yeah, I mean, I think that was, to me, just because it was so unexpected. I really didn't think we were gonna win that 3-0. I thought maybe like, I don't know, 1-0, 2-1 or something, but I absolutely did not think we would win that 3-0. And just from that game, that McKennie goal was just, yeah, I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, that was just a fantastic goal. That, just the victory, the 3-0 victory, plus that goal, plus that being McKennie's, well, first Champions League goal and then second goal overall. I mean, I think just everything within that moment, that definitely was just, yeah, the standout positive moment of 2020 for me.
Mr. USA Chucks trying to anger the Mexican on the call. Sergio, there you go.
Go on then, mate. Come on then.
No, it was a good goal. It was a good goal. For a guy who played in MLS, like, what happened?
Hey, Juventus might be getting another guy from MLS from that same youth system, but we'll talk about that when things are a little more official. I just want to mention a couple other things from the most kind of the memorable side. Post-lockdown, if you can do it, I can do better goals that Ronaldo, Dybala, and Douglas Costa scored against Genoa. Those were pretty fantastic because it was just
was fun to watch.
That, I mean, it was fun. And it was just a terrible game up to that point, and then all of a sudden, away they went. And then the most memorable thing for me from 2020 in terms of Juventus has to actually do with this podcast. And it is the reaction that we had while we were talking about Maurizio Sarri getting fired to Andrea Pirlo getting hired, because those reports broke about 40 minutes into us recording our podcast episode about Sarri. So it wasn't official yet, the hiring, but that was basically the sign that said, okay, out of nowhere, here comes Andrea Pirlo after a week of being the under 23 manager. Here is your new fancy car that you have no experience with at all.
That was definitely a great moment of a live radio, even though there's no radio, but it was it was fun to react in the moment because, and like almost, I don't know, 4 or 5 months in, like still feels pretty bizarre that to see him kind of like roam the sideline. And, you know, just to remember that moment where everything, like we're just throwing names out there like crazy and no one came up with Andrea Pirlo, and the fact that he ended up being the manager, that just kind of tells you all you need to know about where Juventus is right now and just the year overall. Like nothing was too unbelievable for you to actually think it could happen. So yeah, that was also a great moment, I think.
Yeah, just to show how long 2020 has been, that happened in August. That was 4 months ago, which yeah, in normal times, it's not that long, but it feels like it's been a while.
Yeah, that was surreal stuff. I remember that was just weird. I remember my reaction be like, you know, like I remember I had a little more uncensored reaction in my head, but
I just remember being so utterly floored as to like, because we had just gotten done a solid 25 minute segment about all of the people that we were anticipating would get the job, and then we just like basically there, you know, just throw your, it's like somebody just ripped the tablecloth off with everything on it and just, you know, threw the entire meal onto the floor. And we were like, what?
Yeah. As I've told the story a few times to people, I just kind of leaned into the mic and was like, Hey guys,
was about to say something. And I remember Sergio was about to say something and I was like, why is he interrupting Sergio?
Before we get to Champions League talk, just one last kind of look back at 2020. Who would you guys say was Juventus's best player of 2020?
Matthijs de Ligt.
Thank you, Chucks.
That was the first name that popped up in my head, yes. But I was still thinking about it. Just thanks, Sam, for stealing my
You're welcome.
I still got to think about it.
I would have two guys on the top of my mind. I think definitely De Ligt is one. And just from a, you know, goal scoring output, you have to put Cristiano Ronaldo out there just in the calendar year. I don't have the number right here with me, but I feel pretty confident he probably was the guy who scored the most amount of goals for Juventus in the calendar year. So I would definitely have to put him there too. But I have to agree with Sam, and I hate that we're all going to go chalk, but De Ligt, I mean, not only for his play, which was pretty damn good, but especially in the second half of Maurizio Sarri's season and what we have seen so far from him in the Andrea Pirlo era, he's just been really, really, really good. I mean, if he stopped improving right now, if he just didn't improve not even a little bit more for the rest of his career, he'd be a top 10 center back in the world right now. And to think that he's 20 years old, he still has tons of room to improve. Like, it's scary to think how good he will, like he already is, and how good he will become. And, you know, besides that, just the fact that he played for so long with a dislocated shoulder and kind of like gritting his teeth and kind of like just powering through and still being that linchpin in the back that the team needed. I mean, that just showed that's what you want from a central defender. That's what you want from a guy on your team, just to really just give it everything he's got. And that's why I agree with Sam. I think he was the best player for the team in the year, for sure.
Yeah, I think that
Juventus needs to like just install an ATM in his house that's just linked to the club's money so that he can just take out whatever he wants at any time.
So in other words, make him the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, right. Pretty much.
Dutch Reserve.
Dutch Reserve. I think that, you know, we made a passing reference to the possibility of, you know, making him captain and, you know, jumping the rest of the line a couple of weeks ago. But the more I watch him play and the more I watch him also not just play, but lead while he's on the field, it's not so tongue-in-cheek for me anymore. I kind of really want that to happen because I think he's well on his way to deserving it. And he's just also, he's just the most consistent guy. And he really is a leader in the back at half the age almost of some of the guys that he plays with. It really is remarkable how fully he knows his craft already. And that's before he learns all the dirty tricks that we can teach him in Italy and, you know, all the other stuff. And as Sergio said, he just continues to naturally improve because he's only 20 years old, 21 years old. I think that he's going to, you know, the chances are that he's going to be in the running for best player of the calendar year for Juventus, not just this year, but next year and however many years he plays for Juventus, which I hope is a lot of years, because he's that damn good.
Yeah, I imagine sometime next season. Well, yeah, no, I imagine like next season those conversations will become more solid or like more concrete about, you know, potentially fast tracking into captaincy, especially depending on, you know, I think I said that last episode, just kind of the state of our four captains or so right now of Bonucci, Chiellini, well, not in order there, but Bonucci, Chiellini, Dybala, and Alexandro. Yeah, just kind of, you know.
Bound to be some contract talks in there as well, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Coming up soon.
Yeah. Too. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think, hey, yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, just those conversations of, you know, his captaincy of next season. But yeah, besides those players, I guess for my pick, besides, yeah, De Ligt, I guess, kind of honorable mentions to two other players, to Juan Cuadrado, of course, especially for his second half of the calendar year, I should say, so the beginning of this season, and Adrien Rabiot, of course. He ended last season really well, and then also started this season just extremely well, and just has become extremely important in this midfield, in the central midfield. So, I think he gets, yeah, Cuadrado and Rabiot get, yeah, two honorable mentions as well.
All right, let's wrap things up with a little Champions League talk. Obviously, we've been so busy with other Juventus things going on, we haven't actually had a chance to talk about the Champions League draw that happened a few weeks back. So I will now turn it over to the man who, on the same day that we're recording this, wrote about said Champions League opponent, Porto. And then I assume we've got a certain Mexican on the podcast that has a little bit of beef with said author. Let's get our boxing gloves, Chucks.
Yeah, I'm not going to be wearing the gloves. I'm just going to be wearing the headgear after that miss. That was a big miss. I'm just going to put on the helmet and take them once I'm done. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think, like I said in the piece that I wrote, I don't think the draw could have gone much better. And I don't think anybody would really say otherwise. Of course, we said that last year. And look what happened. Porto, there is no easy team anymore in this tournament. There are no more Ferencvaroses. Yeah, I had to say them again. There are no more Dinamo Kievs. Now it gets serious. And while on paper, Juve would definitely be the favorites, Porto is a team that can cause Juve problems. The question, I think, based on what I've analyzed, is it comes down to two things. One, can Juventus win the midfield battle? Because the midfield really, especially
with the way Oliveira is playing for them right now, he's their leading goal scorer. He's just really their main engine. If they let Porto's midfield get a hold in the tie, especially early in the at the Estadio Dragão, I don't assume there's going to be fans there, but still, other guys' stadiums, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the Juventus back line, because that can really cause some issues. What really is, I think, the biggest question in the tie is which version of Porto's defense is going to show up, because they've been really inconsistent. You know, they've kept clean sheets in 5 out of their 6 Champions League games this year. The only team they gave up goals to was Manchester City when they lost 3-1 in the opening game. But they're also, in an 18-team league, they're 13th in defense. They've given up 15 goals in 11 games. And in the, as of the time of our recording, the team that is rock bottom in Portugal has actually given up one fewer goal than Porto, who are in third. They've given up at least 3 or more goals in league play 3 times. So they are as liable to shut you down as they are to totally implode on themselves. And
sounds a little Barcelona-y, doesn't it?
It does, with players that are less famous.
Yes.
But it's going to be really interesting on those two fronts. And also, and this is the point where our resident Mexican will give me a thumbs up on, because I actually shot him a DM last night while I was doing my research to talk about Agustin Marchesin. This guy scares me as a goalkeeper. Like, he's good. And he's the kind of guy that I feel like could very easily, over the course of one or both legs, go Stefano Sorrentino and just not let anything in and start making all sorts of crazy saves to keep Porto close, at which point all bets start to end up off. So it puts a lot of onus on anybody in a scoring position, especially guys like Ronaldo, Dybala, Morata, to be as clinical as possible. Because if they're not exactly right, if they give Marchesin a chance to save a ball, he can get there. I've seen a couple of highlight videos where he, like, you know, he had to anticipate one way or the other in like a one-on-one, and the guy goes the other way, and he just like sticks out some weird body part that you would not expect to be able to get to the ball and ends up making contact and getting the ball away. His reflexes are insane. It really makes me wonder how the heck Argentina's never given him more of a role in their national team setup, given how terrible their goalkeeping has been the last World Cup cycle or two. He was excellent in the Mexican League for a long time, and he had a very good year last year coming in to replace Iker Casillas, which was, you know, also big shoes to fill, even though he was in the twilight of his own career. So yeah, I think that really what it comes down to is, can Juve keep the midfield reined in and get the upper hand in the midfield themselves? And will the Porto defense show up, or will they faceplant? You may now aim and fire, Sergio.
Yeah, no. I agree 100% with everything you said, in the sense that Porto, there's no slouches. There are no slouches. Like, they're a good team, and it's not going to be an easy walk through the park to beat them, that's for sure. But like you said, I mean, at this point, what are your options, right? And from the available options, I think Porto is a manageable side. It's a good side. It's a side that could definitely give Juventus trouble. But, you know, it's a manageable game as well. So I think that they should be favored. I think that, you know, again, they were favored last year as well. So who knows? But I think overall, I think there's going to be a good couple of matches. The one thing I did, you know, the one thing you guys are referring to is that Sam Spies, which is really good, and you all should read, and I agree with most, pretty much every one of his points, is that, but he failed to mention one of the most important guys in that Porto side, which is Jesus Corona, which is a Mexican winger. He was actually named the best player in the Portuguese league last year. He had his best year by far, over 20 assists overall in all competitions. He was just a monster, and he's playing in a really good form right now. You know, I think from all I've heard and from all I've read, he should be right now in the Premier League or in La Liga or something like that, if you know, if we didn't have the whole thing that's going on right now. So that was the one thing that I was like, okay, Sam, what's up? Like, is it a Mexican bias or what are we talking about?
I said this before we started recording, but I just want to put it on record too. Is it like, when I do these kinds of articles, I try to look through and kind of guess who's going to play where in a more or less concrete formation that Juventus might be able to face. And when you look at where Corona has been, Sergio, you put it really well before we started to hit play. He's very much been kind of a Juan Cuadrado in that he's been playing kind of all over that right side of the Porto formation this year. And so I never, you know, he's listed as having a couple of games in every single spot, but he's never really like the top guy in any one spot because he does everything. And that caused me to overlook him, which was a really stupid mistake. I will also use that to point out one other point I made in that piece, which is that's kind of a thing about Sergio Conceição, the manager at Porto, and his style in general, is that that is so fluid, that team. Like I know that the who scored formation listings sometimes don't quite get things totally spot on, but if you look at those listings, it says that he has used at least 9 different formations this year, which, like, you know, I always, you know, I thought that Max Allegri was bad when he would just mess with crap for the sake of messing with it. Like, that is like another level entirely. But it also points out one to me that the preparing for this game, for these ties pregame, is going to be a bit of a guessing game for Pirlo. And it's going to, a lot of how these games turn out is going to be how Pirlo reads to what Conceição is doing in the moment and reacts and tries to change the team. And I actually think that could bode well, because one of the things that I think Pirlo has done best as a manager this season, that he's had a couple of hiccups towards the end of the year where I think he maybe didn't do quite as well as he could have. But, you know, earlier on in the season, he made a couple of really good in-game moves to change games, to switch things around, switch the formation, but to definitely switch the focus of the attack into areas that looked more vulnerable. That's going to be a really big key for a when you're playing against a coach that is as malleable as Conceição seems to be, to be able to roll with those punches and find a weak spot in the moment.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add, actually. Just one quick thing. I thought the Jesus goal and that thing was very funny, by the way. I thought it was an entertaining little battle between a sparring battle between our two resident
No, there was writers. No battle. I just lay down. That was...
Yeah. No, one other thing just about Porto in general. I think, you know, with Juventus, it's one of two things with like the round of 16. It's like, okay, we either get like a really, really good team, like a Bayern or something, which, okay, that humbles us all. And that makes us think, okay, we're the underdog, but like, you know, we're going to give them everything. We're going to give them hell. And like, you know, I mean, generally we've put out really good performances against like, you know, the big dogs in like round of 16 and quarterfinals, et cetera. Or we then have the really, really like low team. And then we think, oh, yeah, we got this easy, you know. And then, well, yeah, we end up messing it up. And I actually thought that the perfect opponent for a round of 16 for this year would have been, like, Sevilla. I think they're just big enough where, like, we don't think, oh, it's just a small team, you know, no worries. But they're just small enough that it's, like, not, you know, that it's yeah, I mean, it's doable that we could negotiate it. But I mean, that said, I think Porto still are in that kind of middle ground of like still definitely very good, but I mean, frankly, doable. And I feel like Juventus needs a team like that, like a team in the middle that like isn't like, you know, Real Madrid or Bayern or something, but also isn't like, I don't know, name whatever, like small, I don't know, the smallest team from Anyway, name any kind of small team, like a Ferencváros or something. Hey, I said it too.
There you go. We're not done with them just yet.
No, I'm just when I thought I was out, it pulled me back in. So that's used up. But yeah, I mean, I think, so yeah, Porto kind of a middle of the ground team. And I think that's generally good. But I'm still just cautious that it's going to be one of those banana peel fixtures that, you know, basically like Lyon last year, that we just find a way to magically mess it up. But I'm definitely more optimistic than last year's tie, but still cautious.
Yeah. If you're not at least a little bit cautious after the Lyon experience of last year, then I don't know who is. That concludes another episode of The Old Lady Speaks and the final one of 2020. We are barreling towards our 1 year anniversary in a couple of months, so make sure to get your party socially distanced party reservations in store. So as always, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Juventus Nation on Twitter, at Black and White and Red All Over on Facebook. You can also follow us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Google Podcasts, all three of those. Search Black and White and Red All Over, we should pop up. If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, feel free to leave us a rating and a review. So for Sam and for Chucks and for Sergio, we all say a Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year!
And because this is Serie A and we only have 3 days worth of a holiday break, we'll be talking Juventus action once again next time. So for my three cohorts on the podcast, this is Danny saying thank you very much. Stay safe out there, and may 2021 bring us some happy thoughts, because 2020 definitely did not. See you guys next week.